righty then. Push the button, Max. Push the button, Max. Do you remember that, Tim?
Oh, from the Jeep.
I thought it was around. It was the Great Race or something like that with Peter Falk and Jack Lemmon. Jack Lemmon kept telling Peter Falk, "Push the button, Max."
That sounds like something from Get Smart.
Yeah, okay. I guess it does at that. Well, all right, Get Smart. I wish we could. I wish I could. Hello there. This is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, and this is our Monday night program called North Shore Sports Night. We've been off for a while due to various and sundry crazy reasons, but we are on tonight, and we have, I think, a rather... you got to get in here, Tim. I just pressed the wrong button again. All right, there it is. It stopped. Anyway, Tim Kearns is with us, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And we will be talking a little bit different order tonight. We are going to wrap up the Celtics season a little bit and talk some sports in general with sports writer Mike Grenier. Then we'll check in with Gary Larrabee, who is an expert on golf, among other things as well. We'll talk. I'm going to go back and take a look at the U.S. Open. I wanted to do that a couple weeks ago, and I wasn't able to put the program on. And then at around 7:45 or so, somewhere in that vicinity, we'll be talking with St. Mary's High School football coach Sean Driscoll, who is coaching one of the Aganis teams in football. And that football classic will be on Wednesday evening as the Aganis games are well underway, having started on yesterday. So, Tim, welcome. Did you get a chance to go up to Gloucester and see the incredible crowds up there this weekend?
You know, I did not, Rick. I was busy around the house taking care of the honey-do list, and it is such a marvelous time. I think a lot of people from outside of Gloucester scheduled vacations, because I remember all of the campers setting up on the softball field and on the football field years back for the entire week.
Yeah.
And are out behind the football field and the old baseball field. And those people, you know, scheduled their vacations to get into Gloucester to celebrate Fiesta with the people of the town. And it is crazy. You know, first time I went down there, I ran into a bunch of my students, and I went, oh boy.
Yeah. Well, it was the locals, as I have heard, have not seen that many people on the beach on Saturday and Sundays. Saturday in particular, to watch the sporting events. And on Saturday, it was a perfect 10. It was warm, the sea was calm, and it was just amazing. Plus, same thing, I've never seen so many pleasure craft out there. So it was good, and I've not read anything bad. Nick Kukuru reports all the winners. You can check out the Gloucester Times. In fact, if you check out the North Shore Sports Writers, the Salem News Sports Writers podcast tomorrow with Bill Newell, you will get in more information, plenty more information with Nick on that, as he will be talking along with Phil Stacey, Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and, of course, Bill Newell. About wrapping up the school season, and also talking about Fiesta, as Nick did the coverage there. So that's all tomorrow coming up, dropping probably around 8 a.m., Gloucester St. Peter's Fiesta, the Aganis All-Star Classics, and all other good stuff. Phil Stacey, Executive Sports Director, Salem News, Matt Williams, Assistant Sports Editor, Nick Giannino, Nick Kukuru, the Gloucester Times, and, of course, MSO's Bill Newell. That's tomorrow. Meantime, today, again, we had... all the winners were posted. It was interesting also yesterday, Tim. I was in my my stepdaughter's yard, which is at down the fort, as they say, and they couldn't keep the flag on the pole. The wind kept blowing it off. So the walkers, you do a courtesy walk. You have about 40 people who walk the greasy pole first as a courtesy, and you can't you're not allowed to get the greasy to get the flag on the first walk. But they didn't have to because it fell off. And they had a deuce of a time trying to get that sucker back up there. So what they did was they finally, they put the stake up there, the mast, without the flag. So, the winner went out and grabbed just the stake without the flag. But, it was, a delightful weekend, I guess, up in Gloucester. The carnival, drew a lot of kids and so on. And, again, from all accounts, it was a good time. So, where's your mind sports-wise, Tim?
Well, you know, we had the Celtics not complete their mission, but I think, you know, if you look back upon the totality of the season, they came up one game short of winning it all when, you know, in January, we thought they were one loss away from ineptitude. I mean, they were playing horrible, and it didn't look good, and they suddenly turned it around, and they just tore through the rest of the season. They tore through the Eastern Conference, and they won six games against a team that most would say was projected to be one of the favorites to win it again.
Yeah.
So, you know, disappointment, yeah. Hang your head, no. A lot of things to look forward to, certainly. Hopefully the first-round draft choice can add something to the team. Well,
they don't have a first-round draft choice.
Well, whatever draft choice he was, you know, the first pick that they had is supposedly very highly rated.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Yeah.
Well, we'll get more on that with Mike Renier. And I'm surprised you started off with the Celtics. I thought you might talk Red Sox because all of a sudden it looks like Alex Cora is doing his magic again.
Yeah, you know, he shaved the beard off, and all of a sudden they started winning again. They got, you know, middle of May, and they get on a streak, and they frankly they can't get off the streak. So let's hope that they can continue. You know, the good play, the pitching has been outstanding. The relief corps has been solid. It's solidifying day by day. They're getting clutch hitting from throughout the lineup, even with a couple of guys missing. They're hitting the ball, and you know it's good hitting is contagious, and that seems to be the case here with the Red Sox right now. Is the good hitting is contagious up and down the lineup, and they're making plays defensively. They've tightened up, I think. Hitting wise, they've loosened up, so all seems good there.
Yeah, and kid from UMass is the Conn Smythe Trophy winner, Colorado Avalanche win, and Sean Driscoll. Give me a minute here. Dale Dunbar predicted that last week. Winthrop High School hockey coach, and he's also an NHL agent. And he did a little preview of the finals, and he predicted that the Avalanche would win, and they did. A great series, but man, you watch Colorado and Tampa Bay, and as much as I love the Bruins, they're not in that league at all.
Oh, you know, you watch both of those teams go at it, and it was nonstop pressure. With both teams, and it was an intense series, you know. And I was hoping Colorado could have closed it out a little bit better, but you got to give Tampa Bay credit; they were not going to get out without a fight, and they kept fighting.
Hey, did you watch that? Speaking of fighting, that brawl in MLB, I think it was Seattle, and I don't know who else it was. Did you see that?
Now, you know, I saw the story on online, but I didn't follow up on it because it's such foolishness.
Yeah, but you know,
I've seen it many over the years. It's like, you know, stop it, grow up.
But where else can you see millionaires knock each other around and drag each other to the ground and pull hair and stuff like that and punch each other and, you know, poke each other in the eyes? I mean, you know, 30, 40 millionaires going at it. It's hilarious.
Yeah, you know, it's so asinine. It really is asinine. You know,
yep.
Trying to get hit in the course of, you know, in the course of your career, you're gonna get hit. Can you imagine if every time Don Baylor got hit, he charged the mound?
Or Minnie Minoso? Yeah.
No, I mean, you know, Baylor set the record for being hit. Hit by pitches.
Yeah.
He just spent more time running to the mound than running the first base.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I had a Supreme Court metaphor in there, but I'm going to let it go. All right, we're going to take a break.
Okay.
No, we're going to take a break. Excuse me. And we'll check in with Mike Grinion, talk some Celtics talk and other stuff with Mike in just a second here. This is North Shore Sports Night, and you get a hold of us at msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com. So let us take a break. We'll be back and talk some more.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we are back. I got to bring Tim back here. And speaking of back, my back is much better. That's why we were out for a few weeks. And thank you for your kind words, Mike Grinion. And welcome back. How are you?
We're doing well here. And it's too bad the Celtics couldn't push it to the very limit of seven games. But in the meantime, Rick, I have a question for you. And you guys are talking about the fiesta and the greasy pole. Is it possible to push Draymond Green onto the greasy pole? You know, where he maybe gets banged up a little bit.
Now, well, here's...
I would like to see him do the greasy pole split. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, something along those lines.
Oh, my goodness.
Something, well, because if anybody deserves to be pushed on the greasy pole, not knowing what the consequences are, it's him.
Oh, Lordy. Well, listen, before we get into that, Mike, I want to pause for a serious note and wish you and your lovely bride congratulations on 50 years married. That's a tremendous milestone. Everybody knows you two, loves you, and we're just so happy that you're able to get this far and keep going.
Well, yeah, well, thank you for the mention. That's awesome. Actually, yeah, we went out to dinner on Saturday, which was our 50th anniversary, and, you know, I have to say, with putting a sporting note on this, obviously, my wife Eileen always likes to say, Mike, we've been married so long because you worked nights, and I worked days. You know what I mean? And she said that jokingly. However, that was a piece of it. And, you know, sure enough, she's been a sports fan her whole life. We met over the fact that we both liked John Havlicek. At age 16, our mutual like was John Havlicek of the Boston Celtics. And soon after, we were dating. So therefore, I can say that Havlicek had something to do with it.
Well, he'd like to know that, I'm sure, if he were still around.
Right. He would. You know, I might have actually mentioned it to him in the locker room.
Is that right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Over the years, because on John Havlicek Day in 1978, he signed posters for actually all the media members, and he put to Mike and Eileen, you know, best wishes. He was like an all-time class act, and I know that a couple of Celtics players have been better over the years, specifically Larry Bird, but my all-time favorite Celtic, and certainly a guy who won eight championships, John Havlicek, remains my all-time favorite.
You know, Tim and I, we're married to people who support us in our sports endeavors as well.
Yeah.
We don't get out there as often as you have had to do. Were you able to bring Eileen to some of the venues and some of the big games that you covered?
This is great, Rick. Yeah. As a matter of fact, she's such a sports fan that, Tim, you'll love this, too. When we were, like, 20 years old, before I started covering for newspapers and I was still a college kid, we actually got Celtics half-season tickets, meaning 20 games, at the old Boston Garden, first row of the second balcony, dead center, $2 per game. So that meant that our 20-game package was $40, or $80 for the two of us total to watch half of the Celtics home games. It was an incredible deal. It's not about a relationship grew at the same time. So yeah, she was a Celtic season, took her hold of throughout the Larry Bird years, came to many college hockey games with me, Ken Dryden of Cornell, and all those great teams that BU had back in the 60s and 70s and all that. Baseball games, she's been to, I don't know, 80% of the stadiums in the country.
Wow.
With me. So yes, fortunately for me, she's been an awesome sports fan and pretty much knows her stuff. I mean, watching the Celtics, she really knows her stuff, including this season, of course.
Yeah, you know, like, go back to John Havlicek just for a second. It is said that he had a larger than normal heart, which explained his ability to run forever on the court. And I think that large heart extended to you and your wife, that enabled you to navigate 50 years.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. No doubt about that, Tim. That's a great point. But Havlicek, to me, I don't know if he could play in today's game because his game was running for 45, 46, even 48 minutes per game, cutting, running, all that stuff. I'm sure maybe he would have adapted to the three-point game. However, as all three of us know, the Celtics at the time played that style, which benefited him because he ran all the time. He cut. He received backdoor cuts, frontdoor cuts. He was a great passer. He had more stamina than anybody in the NBA, and that's what made him a champion 8 times. So a lot of players could look up to him and say, wow, this guy was really something else.
I want to ask you – oh, go ahead, Tim.
John Havlicek playing with Larry Bird and Bill Walton in 86.
Oh, my goodness. Well, they went 60 – as you know, they went 50-1 on their home court counting the playoffs. With that 1986 team, they might have gone 51-0, and they might have won like 72, 73 games had Havlicek been, let's say, even towards the tail end of his career playing. You know, that was like actually a question, Tim. That's a great point. That was actually a question that a lot of media people had when Larry Bird joined the team. Pete Maravich got to play a little bit to the latter part of his career with the Celtics, and people wondered how he would have done in his prime playing a point guard with the Celtics. With the great Celtics team as well. A lot of people said if Havlicek had been born a few years later and been on that Celtics team with Bird and McHale and Walton, they would have been unbeatable. I mean, you know, it was just an unbelievable era.
All right, Mike, I want to ask you, first thing I see now in the postseason critiques is let's get rid of Marcus Smart. Gasper wants to get rid of him, trade him for somebody. But I want to ask you about the final three games that the Celtics look so bad in. And I wonder, and I, you know, I don't like to criticize, it's not fair to criticize me from long distance, but I feel that the demise, not the demise, but the fact that the Celtics couldn't compete better, has a lot to do with the fact that Jason Tatum didn't play well. And I don't know if that's because of Golden State, or because of Jason Tatum and the Celtics' plan. What's your view on all of that?
I think it's a combination of things. First of all, I think around here, because we're so Celtic-focused and Celtic-centric, forget how great a team the Golden State Warriors have been, not just this season, but in the past 7 or 8 years, 4 championships in 7 years. So therefore, they had a lot to do with it. They have that so-called championship poise, championship experience, championship savvy. That meant a lot when they were down 2-1, when the Warriors were down 2-1. All of that kicked in for them. They weren't fazed by a loss. They came back and won at the Boston Garden, and then, you know, won again at the Boston Garden. We call it TD Garden now, I guess, right, guys?
Yeah.
But, you know, they won twice at the Garden in critically important games, and that's why they walked away with the championship. From the Celtics' point of view, Jason Tatum, as you might know, Tim and Rick, he set a playoff record, all-time playoff record for most turnovers, 100.
I didn't know that, no.
Yeah, 100 turnovers, I believe it was, for the entire playoffs. Obviously, that is something that the team needs to address in the offseason. Jaylen Brown, obviously, was no exception either. He committed a lot of turnovers. And which brings back to your original point, Rick, is do the Celtics need a better point guard to make this whole operation work? Part of me says yes, because as much as we love Marcus Smart and everything he does, he's not a true point guard. You know, let's say Jalen Brunson is a free agent on the market out of Dallas. He's much more of a true point guard than Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart is more of a hybrid. He can be the point guard, but he's also the defensive stopper, sort of like in the Casey Jones kind of way in the Celtics' heyday, but he's a much better offensive player than Casey Jones. So I'm not sure what they're going to do, but I think in the offseason there's several things that need to be addressed. One is obviously the ball handling. I mean, so we talk about that. Do they need a better point guard? And if so, then do you trade Marcus Smart? I don't think they're going to trade him. Everybody loves what he brings to the table, his defense, his tenacity, and now his experience and all that. But what do you do if you need a better point guard? I don't know. Do you squeeze him out and let him play 20, 25 minutes off the bench? I guess that's one option. But he's making a lot of money, so he's getting starters minutes and getting money that the starter gets. So that's one thing you have to be concerned about. But I also think that you have to take the load off Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum as far as creating. They have a lot of self-inflicted turnovers, both
yeah,
of them.
Right.
And I think part of that is the way that the defensive scheme that Steve Kerr came up with and denied them the middle, and they kept taking it into the middle and into traffic and got into heavy-duty problems with turning the ball over. I think Tatum and Brown have to become smarter in their approach to the game, play the thinking, the cerebral part of the game has to get better for them. And the other thing I think needs to be addressed is they need to strengthen the bench. I thought that became an obvious flaw in the final three or four games. Well, throughout the finals in particular, but in the final three or four games, we saw that Coach Udoka obviously didn't trust Peyton Pritchard. Daniel Tice saw no minutes. Grant Williams pretty much disappeared. And Derek White, to me, even though he had a couple of terrific games in the playoffs, overall was, I thought, in my opinion, a tremendous disappointment. He only shot like 30% on threes, 35% overall. He brings a little bit to the table on defense, but he's certainly not a great defensive player. He's a pretty good defensive player. So I when you talk defense, right now he's their lead guy, along with Grant Williams, in terms of their bench strength. You're talking the two top guys off the bench are really Derek White and Grant Williams. And I don't know that Udoka trusts either of them to play the important minutes and get the important baskets off the bench that the Celtics need. They really need to enhance that bench. And guys will become available in the next couple of weeks here because free agency is upon us. Guys will be cut by certain teams. Other guys will be moving around from team to team. And I think the thing that's been talked about with the Celtics, Rick and Tim, is that they need some veteran guys off the bench. You saw that with Golden State. They had some veteran guys who came off the bench and were terrific for them. So that's what the Celtics need to do. I think the bench strength really needs to improve. And the whole issue with the point guard is something that they're going to have to decide what they want to do with Marcus Smart, because they do need a true point guard, a pass-first point guard who gets Tatum the ball and Jaylen Brown the ball in their particular spots where they can be most effective.
Well, Kyrie might be available.
Well, you know, isn't that funny? He's already demanding now. A month ago, he was saying that he and Kevin Durant were going to, quote, manage the franchise. Manage the franchise. And now, a month later, a month and a half later, it seems like 6 months since the Celtics beat him 4-0. Kyrie is suddenly saying he wants to go elsewhere, and he wants permission to do a sign and trade. There's about 28 or 29 teams that he does not want to play for. So who does he want to play for?
Well, who's going to pay him the money that he's demanding, Mike, number one?
That's true, Rick. That's another great point, Tim.
I saw the number. I went, is this guy out of his mind?
Well, that's the point I was getting at, I think. But yeah, there's a lot of teams that, I mean, obviously Brooklyn is done with him. They've washed their hands with him. I think a couple weeks ago they let their hands show by saying that they weren't sure they were going to sign him to more than a 1-year contract. That kind of told Kyrie right there, we'll see you later. So, they don't want him, and if he walks away, I don't think Kevin Durant wants to be there because there won't be enough talent surrounding Durant for them to be a serious challenger to the Celtics or the Philadelphia 76ers or the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference. But regarding our Celtics, Tim, you made a great point before Rick called me here that they did have, overall, they had a great season. Like you said, back in January when there were a couple of games on the 500, they were ready to implode. Udoka had some strong feelings about what they should do, and they did it. And they gave us two phenomenal series as far as going 7 games and beating the defending NBA champion Milwaukee Bucks in the semifinals and beating the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals in a 7-gamer. So those are great accomplishments. Obviously, you're just disappointed now. You feel more crushed because the most recent defeat against the Warriors still kind of stings.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we were trashing them, you know, way back when they sucked. They were awful.
Right.
And, you know, they turned it around. They won. You know, do you think the head coach erred by not playing his bench guys that really helped get them to the playoffs, got them through the first three series, and all of a sudden in the final said, "I don't trust you anymore"?
Well, I think Udoka made the classic, and I think he'll learn from this because he was a rookie coach, the classic mistake of playing, even though Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are young, ages 25 and 24 respectively. Jason Tatum, I think, played the most minutes of anybody in the NBA this year. And in the playoffs, he averaged 41, almost 42 minutes per game. And Jaylen Brown was around 38, 39 minutes. And that's just, you know, it's just too much because these playoff series, as we know, Tim, become more physical with each succeeding round. And Jason Tatum took a beating, and Jaylen Brown did as well. And they played strong minutes, heavy minutes. And, of course, it's funny, ironically, Al Horford, who's 36 years old, his minutes went up in the playoffs, but so did his production in the finals, guys.
Yeah.
He shot 60% from the floor and 62% on threes. Now, granted, he doesn't take as many of them as Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, but he had a phenomenal finals.
Well, you know, I think that goes back to what we talked about throughout the season was that the coach managed his minutes brilliantly.
Yep.
So that he had a lot more left in the tank than people expected, and I think he surprised a lot of people.
Yeah, I think he did surprise a lot of people. Now, I think, you know, we talked about his focus during the final, throughout the playoffs, and how badly he wanted this, probably because obviously because he's age 36, doesn't know how much longer he can play, but they made such a strong showing, taking the Warriors 6 games. I expect him to come back, because he's going to be making good money next year, like $26-27 million, I believe. And I think he'll want to come back and give it one more shot to see if they can get over the hump. But they do need some help. And I know, Rick, you mentioned the draft picks. The Celtics only had one because of the Derek White trade. They didn't have a first-round pick. And they got this kid from Alabama in the second round, Tim, number 53 overall. So you had to go pretty deep before they even got a pick. And they got this kid, J.D. Davison, out of Alabama, who's only 19 years old, typical. He only played 1 year of college ball. He only averaged 8.5 points per game, and only shot 30% on threes, and he's turnover prone. So, however, they're not looking to him to be an immediate answer. I mean, even Brad Stevens publicly said after they drafted him, he's a developmental player. They're looking for him to help 2 or 3 years down the road. So I don't think Celtics fans could look at this guy, J.D. Davison from Alabama, and say, "Ooh, he's the missing piece for next season." No, he isn't.
Mike,
maybe two or three years he might be.
We got Gary Larrabee on deck.
Yeah, gotcha.
I got to get to Gary. Let's do it again next week. Oh, wait. Next week's 4th of July. We'll do it in 2 weeks.
Sounds great.
Thank you, Mike, and happy anniversary.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Take care. All right, that's Mike Grenier. I'm Rick Moore. Tim Kearns is here. We're going to take yet another break, and then we'll check in with Gary Larrabee. We'll be right back.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, then. Yes, we're back. Gary Larrabee is here, and jeepers, I missed the last couple of weeks, and the U.S. Open was such a spectacular event, media-wise, and Gary, I want to start there. First of all, how you doing?
Doing well. Most important, I'm glad to hear that you're doing so much better.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I appreciate your thoughts, of course, in the last couple of weeks. It's great. Tremendous theater, as it were.
As it was, and indeed. And you look back at what the country club has offered us for U.S. Opens, 3 18-hole playoffs, and then this spine-tingling finish where Matthew Fitzpatrick hit a historic, you know, second shot on the last hole out of a fairway bunker and puts it up there on the green safely. And it reminded me, of course, of Sandy Lyle doing the same thing on the 72nd hole to win the Masters back in, oh my goodness, 1987 or thereabouts. We couldn't have asked for more. And Brookline, the country club at Brookline, keeps giving us phenomenal theater, phenomenal golf. And I'm sure, guys, that sooner rather than later, we'll be coming back to the country club for another one once the USGA and the membership get their minds together.
You know, Gary, what I really enjoyed was reading about all of the established players complaining about how tough the course was. I'm thinking, now that's the way it should be. You know, that a course, especially the Open, should play hard. These guys should be forced to make decisions, not get up there and wail on the ball, play positional golf, play more strategic golf, and let's see how good, you know, good they really are.
Well, just to expand upon what you just said, Tim, they did make observations of how difficult the golf course was, but they were really saying it in more of a positive tone than a negative tone. They thought it was a very fair setup for the golf course, and they were making those observations, I think, under the spirit that, as you just said as well, that the U.S. Open should be tough. It is. But this was a classic golf course that continues to provide us with chills and spills and drama like you don't see any place else on the PGA Tour except for the Masters.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if that's the way that they meant it, you know, it was then it's even better that they recognized that it was set up that way, and it was almost like a welcome challenge to them.
I think you're right, and but very fair. And they emphasized that. Very fair, very tough. Like you might find it a little bit tricked up Erin Hills out in Wisconsin or Chambers Bay out in Washington State. And I think you're going to see more of this where they're going to be playing, as we've already seen this on the scheduling looking down the road. They want to play more and more of the U.S. Opens on these great classic golf courses such as Marion, Oakmont, Pebble Beach, Pinehurst, and hopefully, guys, they'll be coming back to the Brookline in a far fewer number of years than the 34-year gap between 1988 and 2022.
Well, Gary, how much influence do the players themselves have in the determining where one of the big four, one of the majors, will be played? Do they get any kind of say or any kind of input?
Well, I think the USGA monitors what the players are saying about the golf course they're holding their championships on. I think Brookline just passed with flying colors after 34 years away from the Open and just proved once again that the country club is a golf course for all ages. They had a U.S. Open there in 1913, Francis We Met, 1963, Julius Burrows, 1988, Curtis Strange, and now 2022, Matthew Fitzpatrick, with, as you guys will probably know, is a little bit of a revenge for the English since Faldo lost, you know, the playoff to Strange in 88. And they're happier now that an Englishman's finally won at the country club.
What's the deal with Mickelson and those guys? Tell me about this new league or whatever it is.
Well, the Live Tour has its second tournament this weekend, Rick, out in Pumpkin Ridge out in Oregon, and it's going to have a much stronger field than they had for the first event outside London. Now that Brooks Koepka's joined the fold, Patrick Reed, I think we're going to see some more players making the jump because more than anything else, guys, one of the main reasons why you're seeing so many young players trying to make it as professionals Let's face it, guys. It's all about the money. And no. That's the case here, Tim.
Gary, I thought about this today. Do we have to look at this LIV tour much the same way that in 1960 when the AFL came about and then the ABA came out and then the World Hockey League came out to challenge the established league and drew a lot of named players away for really exorbitant salaries, several only to, you know, fold later on. But aspects of their interpretation of the game were eventually adopted by the major leagues that they contended with. Are we going to see changes by the PGA similar to those?
Tim, that's an outstanding observation, which I have not heard or read anywhere, using those examples from past history. Now, Chris was supposed to learn from history, and I think the PGA Tour, you know, the one response we've seen from the PGA Tour beyond the threat of suspension and banning from the PGA Tour, if you will, at least for the time being, is the fact that they increased the money for 2023, and basically to benefit the big-name players out there. They don't want to lose any more big-name players, but I won't be surprised in the least if what comes to fruition, that eventually they're going to have some type of a merger where the PGA Tour and the LIV Tour need to coexist. And that's a very good point. I won't be surprised if that happens after a couple of years. Of course, another one of the five American venues for this LIV Tour, you know, led by Greg Norman, will be coming to the International out in Bolton just about an hour and 15 minutes from here on the North Shore, the weekend of Labor Day. So lots to look forward to, lots to watch, and don't be confused. Don't be misconstrued by all these flowery things that the players are talking about to stay on the PGA Tour. It's all about the money, gentlemen. We'll see how that evolves over the next couple of years.
Okay,
the LIV Tour is here to stay, guys. There was a full-page ad in the New York Times on Friday promoting the LIV Tour. So that's how far the LIV Tour is willing to spend some serious dough to promote their tour.
Okay, now, second point. I heard this week on British Talk Radio that there was rumbling of a merger of the PGA and the European Tour.
They've been talking about that, too. Very good point, Tim, again. We won't be surprised if it happens, because Norman was the first person talking about a world tour, you know, 25 years ago, which Tim Fincham, the commissioner at the time, just nipped in the butt, although we're getting closer and closer to that right now. Wouldn't surprise me in the least, the DP Tour and the PGA Tour, and then after that, maybe the LIV Tour. We'll have to see how that evolves, but anything can happen these days, and Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour from Winchester, he needs to, I think, wake up a little bit and look at reality. And he's done that with the first step of increasing the purses dramatically for next year. We'll see how it all works out.
All right, Gary, call him this week?
We got one more.
Okay, go ahead, Tim.
There was a player in the tournament this weekend, had a really crappy round. He stopped mid-round, stormed off the course, and immediately joined the LIV Tour.
Well, that hasn't become official. I know you're talking about Jason Konkrak, and that has not, I don't think, officially happened, although that's been speculated. It may happen. We're not so sure.
You know, is something like that going to happen where you're going to see a lot of the lower-tier players on the tour who, you know, don't stand to make a whole lot of money compared to the major players, all of a sudden abandoning the PGA and signing these lucrative contracts to go play in the LIV Tour and get that guaranteed money?
I don't think they're looking for lower-tier players. Konkrak is like the 18th-ranked player in the world, so I wouldn't classify this guy who walked off the golf course down at the Travelers as a lower tier player. They want the best names than they can get.
Right.
But it's very interesting how the LIV Tour is finessing their way around, and they want the big name players. They don't want the lesser known, but we'll see how it evolves. Only 48 players play every week, and we'll see what kind of they have a fabulous field this week out in the Pumpkin Ridge.
All right, Gary, reading the greens this week or not?
Reading the greens. They'll be talking, in fact, about the unique parallel, guys, between Salem Club and Entry Club. They have both hosted four USGA Opens. I think we're going to make some interesting parallels in how hopefully the USGA Opens will be returning to both Salem and the Country Club sooner rather than later. Real quick, guys, Robert Oppenheim finished tied for 15th this week on the Corn Ferry Tour. He's made four cuts in a row. The Corn Ferry was up in Maine. Good going for Rob Oppenheim.
Yep.
Because I was so happy to see Padraig Harrington win the U.S. Senior Open at Saucon Valley. I met Padraig when he played a corporate outing at Turner Hill over in Ipswich. The nicest guy you can meet. I've been rooting for him ever since.
Cool. Well, Gary, we're off next week because of the holiday, but thanks for being so patient with us, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Stay well, and I will be ready to talk golf whenever you are, Rick.
All right, Gary, you stay well, too. Take care. All right, that's Gary Larrabee, sports historian and golf writer. Let's see here. All right, Tim, I got to take one more break, and we'll see if we can get a hold of Mr. Driscoll, Coach Sean Driscoll of the St. Mary's High School football team, coaching one of the Aganis football squads. And we'll see how that works out here as I try to find the right button to press, and we'll be right back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back now. We caught Coach Driscoll, Sean Driscoll, from St. Mary's High School, coaching the Aganis Classic in football coming up this Wednesday. Coach, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
Doing well. Tim's on the other line. It's been, you know, Sean, I think the last time I saw you face-to-face was the day before COVID broke. It was at the Garden, if you remember.
Yes, and they shut down a day or two later.
Yeah, and it was 2 days later it was gone. But anyway, Great to be back, Sean, and we've talked football, so, of course, since then. Tell me about the setup with this Aganis stuff, and then we'll get into some details.
Oh, we started practice last Monday. You know, we welcomed 40 guys in after some played in the Shriners game, and Aganis is the last game of the whole program is on next Wednesday night this week, and started yesterday with a bunch of games: girls softball, baseball, lacrosse, girls and boys, and basketball. I think is tonight. It is tonight, girls and boys, and then it winds up on Wednesday here. And it's been a lot of fun. What's great about the game is the kids have one more high school football game, you know, to showcase some stuff. A lot of them are going on to college and playing college football, which is good. And you make some relationships with kids that as coaches, and then the other players on the team that compete against each other a lot,
mm-hmm.
now kind of meshing together. So that's been fun.
Hi, Sean. How are you?
Tim, how you doing?
I am well. Yeah, I'm good. Let's was it a surprise you got named to coach the team this year?
Well, I got asked back, I want to say it was late January, early February was my thought on it. I did it before in 2014 and
right.
Really enjoyed it. and it was a lot of fun to coach, and again, got to meet a lot of kids, and I had a different staff working with me too on offense and defense, which was great. And then I said, yeah, I'll give it again. Being that, you know, in Lynn, you know, Harry Gannis that week is pretty important here, and it's a big game, and coaching Lynn being part of it's even more special than it was a few years back.
You know, certainly the legacy of Harry Gannis, what he meant to athletics, not only in Lynn, but on the North Shore, and then when he went to college at BU and then under the Red Sox. Did you take a moment to explain to the kids just what he meant to do on the football field?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yesterday they had the presentation of the awards and stuff, and Paul Hallinan does a great job. And one of his great nephews spoke a little bit to that, and you know, talked to the kids earlier in the week about, you know, nowadays you just Google it, you can find out a lot about a person. You know, where he went to school, what he was to the city, you know, how he grew up. And I think a lot of kids did that because they had some comments about it on Friday to us. You know, we kind of gave them a little homework assignment.
Yeah.
Sean, you know, coaching at St. Mary's, after coaching in Winthrop, a very tight-knit community. St. Mary's, you've got kids coming in from all over the place. Does that give you a bit of an advantage in coaching an all-star team like this? Because now you've got certainly a lot of kids from your area, but also kids who, as you said, they played against each other, and they're coming in for a very short week. You've got some tools in your kit now that you can use with these kids.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So coming into that, you know, the biggest thing you do, what I've noticed, you know, jumping over to private school, you have players coming from different parts of Lynn and other communities as well, meshing together as a group as it went on, and that was always, I thought, was going to be a tough challenge. But I will say, this week is kind of a crash course in it, and it's gone well. You know, there's some pretty good rivals that are here
mm-hmm.
to play, you know, and seem to be getting along and coming together as a group. And, you know, tomorrow's our last practice. It's you know, it's challenging. There's a lot going on. A lot of kids got college orientations and stuff, and getting the same group every night sometimes is a challenge. But it's been really good to go through the process to try to get them ready for, you know, they're definitely their last high school football game.
Mm-hmm. Tim?
Coach, you know, I had the opportunity 2003 or 2004 to coach the Gannis baseball game. And it certainly was a thrill. And like you said, you have all these kids from all around the area. And it's like, okay, who do I put where? And for a lot of these kids, it doesn't matter where you put them because they're all such outstanding ball players that they can basically play anywhere. Now, I think it becomes a bit more position-specific for you, but you must have some flexibility to where you can play these guys.
Yeah. So when we come in, when they do the nominations for the game and stuff, they write down their positions and what they're thinking they want to do and where they want to play. And the one thing good about on the Gannis, usually you can focus on one side of the ball. With the numbers not being what they were, we get a lot of kids that will be going both ways. So that's kind of exciting because some of them, you know, only played maybe offense during the year, now getting a shot to play some defense and vice versa. You know, so they're excited about that. And you know, again, it's an all-star game, and, you know, you'll hopefully be a lot of points in the game for both teams. It'll be fun and give the crowd, you know, a little bit what they want. But as far as, you know, people coming in and seeing what they want to play and what they want to do, you know, some people wanted to run the ball. They probably didn't get a chance to run the ball at their school and probably get a couple of shots to run the ball on Wednesday night.
That's cool. Who you got working with you, Sean?
I have pretty much my whole staff. I got Coach, you know, Coach Phelps. Dylan Driscoll, you know, Eric Mack, Bob Logue, and Todd Collier. They've been with me for a bunch of years here, so it's pretty much the St. Mary's staff.
Before I give it back to Tim, I have to ask you, Sean, you're part of an incredible coaching legacy over in Winthrop, now, of course, at St. Mary's. We go back to, I think, Bob DeFelice and then Tony Fusillo and you, and you've been a very kind friend to MSO News Sports, but I want to ask you just a comment on Coach DeFelice because he apparently he is finally really retired, I don't know that some of the younger kids understand the legacy of his coaching in the area.
Yeah, I think, you know, like you said, he is a legend between what he did at Winthrop High School. You know, don't forget, he's also a phys ed teacher there. He was the football coach for years, a Bentley baseball coach. I can't tell you how many times You know, one of the great things I got to witness was my son playing over at Bentley when he was in high school, and Coach DeFelice being there watching, and it was great. But unless you played for him, unless you spent some time with him, you wouldn't realize what an impact he had on a lot of athletes, and you know, even eliminated athletes in high school. He was a good teacher and he had a lot of impact on his kids that he coached over the years.
Okay, here's how far back I go. When I played at Salem State, we played Bentley, and he was the coach.
Yeah, and I believe it. He's a really good baseball baseball coach, baseball guy. You know, just like his brother Frank is, and he had a great playing career. If you really look him up, he had a really good career as a baseball player and a coach. So, tell you what, that's a long time to be active, and I think he impacted a lot of people's lives between Winthrop and Bentley.
Yeah, I will tell you, it was like 1974 when we played over there. Yeah.
Okay, Tim. Sean, before we let you go, what's the breakdown of the squads, east, west, north, south, and where are your kids?
North, south. So we're the south side, and we got the Lynn schools, the KIPP, the Classical English, St. Mary's, Lynn Tech, you know, Chelsea, Revere, mm-hmm. Winthrop.
You got a bunch of kids?
A couple of kids from Arlington Catholic.
Oh, cool.
We have a gentleman from the North Shore from Pingree.
Excellent, excellent.
So we're on the south side where they're more Swampscott, Marblehead, mm-hmm. St. John's Prep, and on that side of things. So it should be interesting. I think it will be a fun game to watch. And, you know, the biggest thing we tell our kids, we get a short time to prepare, just come ready to play and ready to compete, you know, have some fun. And take it from there. It's great to be on the field in July coaching high school athletes, you know, especially in their last game. It's been a great pleasure to be out doing it, because it seems like when the season ends in November and it's done, it seems like it takes forever to get here,
mm-hmm.
Again. So I think, it's good. I think it's good for my staff and, you know, hopefully, before you know it, it'll be August 18th or 19th, whenever we get the official day camp, and we'll be talking again.
We will, and I just want to congratulate you and Tim as being, again, as coaches. Paul Ingram's a good friend of mine, and he never took anything for granted, and he said it was a tremendous honor being a coach of one of the Aganis squads.
Yeah, it's a big game in the city, and I think one of the greatest things they did was add the other games to it, too. As you know, Harry Gannis was a great baseball player. I had some time with the Red Sox, and I think that was important, too. And yesterday, the award ceremony, the scholarships they give out, there's a lot to this and a lot of work that goes into it. And like I said, Paul Halloran and his crew that he has helping him out do a great job.
Tim, last thoughts?
Sean, listen, it's been great talking to you. We don't talk enough anymore. We used to talk all the time. But maybe as we get into August, I'll show up on the field and we'll do a little interview.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
Coach, great talking with you as always. Have fun this week and be well.
Great, thanks. You too. Stay safe, guys.
Take care. Thanks, Sean. All right, that's Sean Driscoll, who is the St. Mary's High School football coach, coaching, what did he say, Tim? The South Squad, right?
Yeah, I can never figure that out. You know, way back in 1975, my, or 74, my ex-brother-in-law from Dartmouth played, and he was on the south side. The game was north of Boston, south of Boston.
Okay.
The squads came from. Now, north, south, I can't make heads or tails of where they're from.
Well, the thing of it is Paul Halloran does such an amazing job, as you well know, Tim, of putting this together logistically, and he covers, you just heard what Sean said, all the different communities just on his squad. So there are kids, I think Paul said something like 24 or 30 communities.
He's got kids in Lynn, but kids on the north side are from Swampscott and Marblehead. And I'm like,
well,
you know, it's like, they need a redistricting plan here.
Redistrict, yeah. Or just call it the red and the blue or something like that. Anyway, great talking with Coach Driscoll. Always, and he's been such a good friend to us over the years, hasn't he?
That he has.
Absolutely. And, my goodness. All right. So we'll be talking with him soon. You know what? Any final thoughts there, Coach? I have one comment. We were talking, I was at a couple of social events over the weekend, and we were talking about choice. And when Major League Baseball players who make millions of dollars choose not to get vaccinated, what that means, there's a discussion there. Because two of the Red Sox are not in Toronto tonight.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just... Well,
what is their rookie leadoff man? I mean, talk about... I don't know.
And the other's their closer.
Yeah, slicing you, you know, cutting your nose to spite your face. Get the freaking shot and play with your team. You know? Oh, that drives me crazy. Don't get me started.
Well, I'm conflicted because I understand the so-called personal rights and all this other, you know, reality stuff. However, when you're in a private club and you're being paid a lot of money, do you play by their rules or not? And I guess you don't have to sometimes.
Yeah, that's what pisses me off. Okay, fine. You don't want to play? You're signed to our team? You don't play. How's that one? You can't go to other cities. Because you're just as likely to get sick or make somebody sick. You know, so sit them. Say, okay, sorry. You know, if the teams played hardball like they used to. You know.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway. Red Sox tonight, good discussions tonight. The only team we left out, well, we left out the Revs and we left out the Patriots, but there's plenty to talk about later on. Tim, I wish you a very, very, happy, 4th of July week and vacation and have fun with some time off.
Yeah, to you and your family as well. Enjoy and, don't let the Rolling Stones get you.
No, we're done with that stuff. All right, Coach, we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
All right, Eric.
Thank you, Tim. Take care. All right, that's Tim Kearns, who is our ambassador of goodwill here at MSO News Sports and our super sports analyst. And my thanks to Gary Larrabee, to Mike Grenier, and, of course, to Coach Sean Driscoll. We're going to wrap it up now. If you want to get a hold of us, please do so. MSONewsSports@gmail.com is the best way to do it. That's our email. And don't forget Gloucester's St. Peter's Fiesta and the Agganis All-Star Classics top this week's Sports Writers Podcast. That will be dropping around 8 a.m. tomorrow here on MSO News Sports. The writers will also be sharing a few highlights from the high school sports season and put a wrap on the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. And there'll be some Bruins talk, too. Obviously, our usuals are Phil Stacey, the executive sports editor of the Salem News, Matt Williams, assistant sports editor of the Salem News, reporters Nick Giannino and Nick Kukru of the Gloucester Times, who is the sports editor there, and, of course, hosting it is our own Bill Newell. So tonight at the Agganis Classic, it's the All-Star basketball game for the girls, which should be wrapping up about now, and the boys basketball game will be starting at Lynn Classical. Oh, actually, it should be underway right now. Tomorrow, it's the soccer game, the girls at Manning Field at 5:30, boys at Manning Field at 7 p.m., and then on Wednesday, it's the football game at Manning Field at 6:30 p.m. That's it for me. I'm Rick Moore. On behalf of Tim Kearns, Bill Newell, and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, I wish you a very pleasant good evening, and be well.